When Hitler and his Nazi party rose to power, one of their first steps was to destroy the books and culture of which every well-read person was so proud, even though many of the books hateful to Nazi were written by Germany's most respected citizens. On university campuses throughout the Reich, fires rose to the skies, fed by such works as All Quiet on the Western Front, and even scientific tests, such as Albert Einstein's monumental theory of relativity, were destroyed. Today, in the midst of a war being fought, among other things, to ensure the freedom of thought and culture for students, scholars, and all men of good faith, your city station broadcasts a unique ceremony. The scene, the steps of the great public library, famed New York Institution of Learning at 5th Avenue and 42nd Street. The speakers here to mark the burning of the books in Nazi Germany and to open an exhibit of the library of books banned in Germany are to include, among others, Newbold Morris, speaking on behalf of Mayor F.H. LaGuardia, who is unable to be with us today. Christos Brionides is now ready to conduct the WPA War Services Band and the playing of America. Now, Dr. Lawrence Raddick of the Metropolitan Library Council will introduce the Master of Ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you our Master of Ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
My fellow citizens of New York, this is an informal meeting in front of the steps of the New York Public Library at 42nd Street and 5th Avenue. One of the purposes of this meeting is to sell some war bonds. Another of the purposes of this meeting is to signalize the opening of an exhibit in the library behind us here. Today, the library is opening an exhibit of books that have been banned and that have been burned by the Axis powers during the 10 years of their ascendancy. There is a reason why we should signalize, why we should commemorate the burning of these books. It is for this reason, whenever the Axis forces have overcome a nation, they have endeavored, first of all, to destroy its cultural roots. They have burned its books. They have then proceeded to burn, literally in many cases, its authors, its educators, its intellectuals, its statesmen. When an Axis nation starts by the burning of books, it ends by the burning of bodies. Those are the two B's that are always linked in the Axis strategy. And to those two B's, we are going to link another B. The B that can help to prevent both the burning of books and the burning of bodies is the buying of bonds. Now, when this little ceremony is over, as I understand it, the library will be open, and you may go in and see the exhibit of those books that have been banned. You know, I'm sure all of you, that the Germans, not the Nazis, but the Germans, have made it impossible for the Sermon on the Mount, for example, to be heard or read in secret by anybody in Axis territory. The Bible is a banned book, and the list goes down from the Bible to books that seem to us harmless. Now, we're going to listen to one or two people here briefly this afternoon, and I'm going to introduce to you a number of famous authors who come from all parts of Europe and who are among the thousands who have been exiled by the German tyranny. I first wish to introduce a man known to all citizens of this city, formerly borough president of Manhattan and now member of the Council of the City of New York, Mr. Stanley M. Isaacs. Mr. Isaacs.
Mr. Fetterman and fellow citizens, this is an important occasion because we're showing to the people of New York what Hitler is really aiming at. He has been the greatest destroyer of all time. Not even Adler, who made the word Hun famous or infamous throughout the world, nor Alaric, who headed the Goths and Visigoths that destroyed Rome, nor Genghis Khan himself, with his Tartar hordes, did as much damage to the world as Hitler has done in the short space of a few years. And his banning of books is a sample and a symbol of what he is trying to do. It really marks his effort to destroy civilization itself, because it's through books, through the literature of the past, that the fine traditions of the world have been handed down. But Hitler can't succeed. Books are the symbols of democracy, and they'll remain as long as democracy remains, and that remains forever here. It's through books that we learn of the ideals of the past, the ideals that have inspired men, that have led them on, that have marked the progress of the world. It's through books, too, and Hitler should learn this, that we also know what happens to the treacherous and cruel and vindictive and destructive tyrants of the past. We know what can be done to him because of the failures of his predecessors. Yes, it's through books that we carry on the fine traditions of the past and pass them on to our children and they to their children. It's through books we know what Magna Carta meant in establishing once and for all the freedom of the individual. We know what the language of our own great Declaration of Independence meant when it established firmly the rights of man, and that means the rights of all men. We learn through books the interpretation and the handling of the great powers of government in our Constitution, which showed once and for all that men of all kinds and races and creeds and colors can live together and work together in harmony. And that is the objective of this war, to carry throughout the world the ideals that we have inherited and that we believe in. There'll be no new world after this war. There'll be no revolution. There will simply be the spread throughout the world of the ideals of democracy that we learn through these very books that Hitler is trying to destroy. We know and we believe, and we're going to find out, that worldwide liberty, worldwide equality, worldwide fraternity, in the end, means security and happiness for all mankind. And there must be no let up in this war until victory is attained, and total victory. We can't afford to have appeasers lift their heads again in this world, because Hitlerism must be destroyed. There can be no premature peace in this world until Hitler is destroyed. Hitler himself, the arch destroyer of all that is fine and ideal, must perish if we want to spread these ideals as we do and carry out President Roosevelt's dictum that the four freedoms must be spread throughout the world, and that the world itself must be a broad, complete, and worldwide democracy.
Thank you, Mr. Isaacs. Now I want to introduce briefly a number of famous authors who were exiled by the Germans and just ask them to rise in their place. One of them is going to speak briefly to us in a few minutes. Remember that the Axis does not consist entirely of the arch-villain known as Hitler. The Axis consists of a large number of nations, 7 or 8 of them, and of those nations, a large number of people in each nation is responsible for what has happened. Not only the heads of those nations, but in many cases, the entire armed forces are equally responsible with their titular heads. Remember, for instance, that when the intellectuals, the writers, the artists were driven out of Italy, they were not driven out merely by the Fiat of Mussolini, but by a large and numerous tyrannous class, of which Mussolini is merely one of the figureheads. I ask you to remember that, as I ask to rise in his place, Ambrose Donini, formerly professor at the University of Rome, and now the editor of an anti-fascist newspaper in this city, L'Unità del Popolo. Mr. Giannini. Thank you. Another thing for us to remember is that the Germans are pursuing their crusade not merely against one sect or one race or one group, but against all sects and all races and all groups that dare to challenge their theory of Aryan supremacy. I now want to introduce to you an Aryan who would not stay with them, who would not agree to that theory of supremacy, and who is here now, a famous novelist, a Bavarian, Herr Oskar Maria Graf. Herr Graf. Thank you. Remember, too, that it is not only the large nations like France that have been overrun, but remember that small and minor nations have been overrun, Czechoslovakia and Denmark. One of the best known Danish novelists who has been famous for many years and whom many of us love and reverence is Madame Karin Michaelis, who is here with us. Madame Michaelis. Thank you. The soul of France lives all over now the world. It lives in France itself, and it lives outside of France among the forces of De Gaulle and among the many intellectuals, writers, educators who escaped from the French massacre in 1940. One of the most effective spokesmen for the France that was and the France that will be is Mademoiselle Genevieve Tabouy, the famous journalist. Mademoiselle Tabouy. One of the first nations to feel the weight of the German heel, as you remember, was the peaceful country of Czechoslovakia, bound to us by so many political ties. I want to introduce to you one of the most famous of the Czechoslovakian novelists, Franz Vajska. And finally, I want to introduce to you a man who is the founder and director of the Library of the Burned Books, which exhibit was opened in Paris, May 10, 1934, the first anniversary of the Auto da Fe of books in Germany. He will speak to us very briefly on the purpose of the exhibit in Paris and of the exhibit here. I introduce Mr. Alfred Kantorovich. Kantorovich.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is common knowledge today that one of the first achievements of Nazi barbarism was the burning of the books on the Opera Square in Berlin and on public squares in all leading cities and universities centers of Germany. With that, as Goebbels boasted, symbolic act began the total war of the Nazis against thought, reason, literature, and science. The hatred of ideas, of the powerful influences of literature on the masses, the hatred which the Führer and his underlings so often betray, or rather boast, in their speeches and writings, is no accident. For their system is based upon the idea of concealing instead of enlightening, on suppressing by every possible means the truth, the knowledge of reality. This system can never allow those to whom it rules and deceives to understand their real situation. That would mean its doom, and doomed it is, because truth and human progress cannot be suppressed for a long time. More than 200 German writers had the luck to escape the barbarians, many of the best known and most respected among them, like Thomas Mann, Stefan Zweig, Leon Feuchtwanger, and many others. They created in Paris, a symbol, the library of burned books, opposed to the symbol of destruction and barbarism. And this symbol of freedom of thought was one of the first objects of Nazi hate and revenge when the Nazis entered Paris. What happened in Germany happened then all over continental Europe. Destruction of freedom and culture and decency. The persecution of the writers and intellectuals, the beginning of barbarism. Many more fine writers became then the victims of the disaster. Of those who survived, many have now found shelter in this hemisphere, in Mexico and in the United States. But not only the men have found hospitality in your great country. The European culture itself, exiled by Hitler and his henchmen, has found the most cordial welcome in America, land of the free. This ceremony of today, this symbolic act of culture in the heart of New York, the inauguration of an exposition of the books burned and banned from Nazi-dominated Europe, gives a vivid account of it. In the name of freedom and culture, we, European writers in exile, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kantorowicz. If the Germans should ever dominate this country, everyone on this platform would be tortured to death. We would be among the first to go. And among the first to go would be the director of the library which has served the people of this city for so many years, an institution to which all of us owe so much. I am very happy to introduce the director of the New York Public Library, Mr. Franklin F. Hopper.
The library has just opened. In our small exhibition room at the left of the entrance lobby, the exhibition of books banned by the Nazis. I doubtless do not need to say that these are not all, by any means, the books the Nazis banned. Doubtless few, if any, know the total number. But we have selected those which would be of interest to the American people. Just outside the entrance to the small exhibition room is another small exhibit of the school books that the Nazis today require the school children of Germany to read. There is another case containing a small exhibit of important books previously banned in the history of the world. And now it had been my expectation to have the pleasure of introducing His Honor the Mayor. At the last minute, Mr. LaGuardia was unable to come. I'm happy, however, that the Honorable Newbold Morris can represent the city. Doubtless the only man in New York, other than Mayor LaGuardia, who would need no introduction whatever to the people of New York, is Mr. Newbold Morris. Mr. Morris.
Mr. Hopper, distinguished guests, fellow citizens of New York, and visitors to our city. I come here on 10 minutes' notice as a pinch hitter for our mayor to represent the people of our city at this ceremony. Behind me here is a building, beautiful, one of the great sights of New York, but within its walls is a university. Books for the people of our city to read, accessible to all. Our public library system is a great threat to any would-be dictator who would like to usurp the power, political power, of a great nation. Our public library system is the first line of defense against tyranny. It is a guarantee that our Bill of Rights will always live. What does freedom mean? Freedom means, first of all, and most important, a faith in the people, a faith in the capacity of our people to reject those doctrines which would injure our institutions, and a capacity of the people to accept only those doctrines which will strengthen our institutions. It is our faith in that capacity of our people to understand what freedom means that we guarantee this freedom. That's the reason we are at war today, because we have faith in each other. Here inside this library is an exhibition of books which are entirely accessible to anyone of the public. First on the list is Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler. Later on, we run into another set of books which would cause a great deal of dismay among certain people. We find Das Kapital by Karl Marx. We find books, the title of which, unfortunately, I can't pronounce, by Nikolai Lenin. Right here, within these four walls. But we're not afraid. If our people decide that they want to read the works of men who have thought, whether their thinking has been thwarted or twisted, that's their business. And we'll defend their right to read those books if they care to. But we believe the great majority of them will reject any indoctrination. We want our people to make up their own minds. And having made up their own minds, we know that they will take any steps to defend that freedom, even if they have to go to war. And that's where we are today. It's different. The democratic process is different. There is no indoctrination. Persuasion, if you will, and that's permitted. And we permit speaking on the street corners, and we'll go to war to defend that right also. Well, we're here to stop the flames from burning the world's learning in other parts of the world, because we don't want those flames started here. And our boys are fighting not on the sidewalks of New York, as our isolationists might have wanted to wait until that happened, but they're fighting thousands of miles away to keep the flames away from the New York Public Library. We're here to exercise our first duty. We're called upon to do many things and to make many contributions to the war effort. But the buying of war bonds and stamps is the least we can do. That's our first duty. And we're not making a contribution there. We're doing ourselves a favor. We're putting our money in the best investment in the world today, in the people of the United States of America. That's why we're buying war bonds and stamps. And I don't want to get into difficult economic theories today, but I can only tell you after reading the figures last night that the total net income of the country in 1943 after deducting taxes will be greater than the total net income of 1937 after deducting taxes, taking 1937 as an average year after the Depression had lifted a little bit. That surplus purchasing power cannot be used for ordinary purchases. The purchasing must be deferred. And your way of deferring that purchasing power and keeping that money safe is to buy war bonds and stamps. And there is a symbol of hatred. Everything to which we are opposed, the burning of the instruments of freedom. Books are weapons. In peacetime, they strengthen our morale in times of war. At all times, books are symbolic of freedom and learning. Extinguish the flames that are burning abroad by helping our boys, financing their equipment, getting the tanks and the guns and the planes there, and giving our government the ships with which to carry them there. Extinguish the flames and buy war bonds and stamps. Do I hear any purchases of war bonds and stamps? If there are any here, please step forward.
Ladies and gentlemen, several people have stepped up to talk to Newbold Morris concerning the purchase of war bonds and stamps.
Any more questions, war bonds and stamps?
I might add at this time that the book that Mr. Morris was referring to is in front of the public library, a symbol of freedom, with the book being burned by the flames of German hatred. He pointed to that book as he spoke in his speech.
British Library in the world today, New York Public Library, not only buy war bonds and stamps, but take advantage of the freedom which is guaranteed to you.
Newbold Morris has concluded his address on behalf of Mayor F.H. Ligotia. And now Christos Vrianides and the WPA War Services Band now play the national anthem.
Thank you.